Hi there, and thanks for joining us. A bumper podcast to finish out not just 2019, but the decade. We're going to talk about Keep Cups, why cybersecurity should be top of your list for 2020, the balloon business, and yoga. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
My next guest has celebrated 10 years in business this year and is somebody who I have a huge fascination with because what she does is simply amazing, and she has brought a friend with her to the studio today. You're written down here as Jenny Red Balloon, but I believe that your original surname was Murphy. So can we go with that, Jenny Murphy?
We can indeed. But no one will know who I am then.
Exactly. You're very welcome to Red Business. Who did you bring with you? Because he's nice and kind of crispy and wrinkly here. Who's this guy?
I bought Johnny the Elf.
And Johnny the Elf is proper elf.
Yes.
For the want of an expression. This is part of your seasonal fare, I'm presuming.
Indeed.
Tell me
but
about...
But especially for you now, you can put him on passenger seat and he can travel around with
I'm
you.
I'm personally terrified of the elf that lives in my house and the things that he does. This guy worse?
This guy has got a far more amenable personality.
But I'm glad of that, and
yes.
As will the kids. Come here to me, Jenny. Tell me a little bit about the business. Those of you who don't know what you do, they're missing out. But what? Tell us about Jenny Red Balloon.
So Jenny Red Balloon is actually Red Balloon, and we are balloon decorators. So we bring the party to your event. We make walls out of balloons, we make castles out of balloons, you name it, we'll try it. I love making big displays, the bigger the better. We have cascaded balloons down the side of buildings, we have made chains on buildings to represent a company in Cork that was called Lockkeeper, I think was the name of it. So we will make your event look fabulous. Whether Horton Works, a building in Albert Quay, their logo was an elephant. So I made them a giant green elephant.
Out of one balloon?
No, out of many balloons.
Out of many balloons.
About 4,500.
That's a lot of balloons.
Yes.
And did you blow them up individually, or was
yes.
there a machine that did that for you?
Well, we have machines that blow them up, but unfortunately they have to be minded while they're blowing. Being
okay,
blown up.
So
yes.
that was laborious, I would imagine, but the elephant was worth it at the end.
It was.
Were you always a bit obsessed with balloons, or was it something that
no.
you kind of fell into?
No. I did business in college. I wanted to be a florist. My hands were too small, so I was never going to cut it as a florist.
Your hands are quite small, but do you need big hands to be a florist?
Well, ideally not be able to wear your communion gloves.
Right, okay.
Because if you think of your favourite flowers, might be a dozen roses with some eucalyptus and some baby's breath, my poor little hands doesn't hold them in one thing. So
that's quite sad. Oh, hang on, me Johnny the Elf is after falling over there. We put him back up. So at what point did balloons come to think then?
I was an auctioneer and I left the
I'm loving this story.
Inflated industry to work in an inflation industry. And Red Balloon began as a gift shop with some balloons. And over a quick space of time, balloons became more and more and more what we did.
Were you any good at the auctioneering? I mean, was it something you enjoyed, or did you find it not quite suited to your talents?
I loved it, but I was always wanted to like redesign the houses. And when I worked in West Cork, you never knew what was going to be inside the door because houses in West Cork were very unique. So you're, you know, invited.
A reflection of the people of West Cork.
Yes. So when you went into a house in West Cork, like you thought you were going into a 2-bed farmhouse. And then you realise it's amazing. All the outhouses have been converted into this amazing like courtyard of a house that had like secret doors going into bedrooms and stuff like that. And then when I moved to Cork, it was working mainly with sort of more 3-bed semis and
yes,
stuff like that. So you just didn't have any...
They're boring. Same outhouse time and time again. The odd bit of decor that might set you off. But
yeah.
So you decided balloons were the future because they became bigger and bigger and bigger in your life. Did you think that you would get to the point where you are now with this lovely building in Ballincollig, which I pass on a regular basis, that you just see rammed with balloons up to the front of the window? Because you've got a big operation now, don't you?
We do. I suppose, you know, they all say about vision. About 4.5 years ago, I looked to buying... I had looked to buying that premises. I knew there wasn't hope. And, you know, I was trying. And so I didn't. But last year I met a guy who was looking to buy a property, and I strongly suggested that this would be a great property, and I also offered to rent the property off him. It's ground floor, we were upstairs, two flights of stairs, we're able to park the van right outside the door, we're able to load, we're able to bring, like, complete our work, and so when we get on site, we do hours and hours creating, we've it all done, so everything is working far smoother and everyone's happier and it's warm.
It's warm and pleasant and enjoyable and full of balloons.
Yeah.
To the colourful creations, because again, the elephant is a prime example of this. That concept has to be in your head somewhere. I mean, you can't Google how do you blow up balloons to make an elephant. That has to be inside Jenny Murphy's head, one would argue.
Yes, I suppose there's a lot of it. My dad was an electrician by trade. He would have done an awful lot of DIY at home. He was always making and creating things. So, and my mum has a natural flair for creativity. While she was filling pints, she always had beautiful displays behind the counter and had a real flair for art. And so between the two of them, I was very hands-on. So I would have a fairly, I suppose, engineering mind that I can see how things would be made. And like, I have an account in Micrometal. There isn't many females in Cork that have an account in Micrometal. When I go into Micrometal, the lads ask me, Jenny, what are you going making now?
And what is Micrometal? Well, that's little the intricate middle parts of the balloon.
Micrometal, it's where you buy all your pieces. Like, it's where the ironmongers go to get iron to make their gates.
So you are almost unique in that environment, therefore.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
But you had tremendous success. You were the first Irish person to be invited to the International Balloon Convention.
Yes.
I didn't realise there was one. You have a certificate in balloon artistry, one of only a few thousand people that have that in the world, and you have won awards at said same International Balloon Convention as well. I mean, that's kind of mad
for
an auctioneer who wanted to study business and then wanted to be a florist but whose hands were too small. It's not bad.
No, it's cool. And I suppose the balloon industry is quite interesting. Somebody sent me a tweet the other day because they had been watching something online. They said, oh, you need to do that. And I was like, I actually know that person, the lady in the States. And he was dumbfounded to think that I know, because the balloon industry is actually very small. And
well, in this country, it's you. So, yes, it is very small.
So I'm competing in float again in January, actually. So I'm going back to St. Louis in January to compete.
And
so
are you on? Best of luck with that. Are you on your own then in the big building in Ballincollig? Or do you have people working with you now?
No, there's a team of us there. So it's expanded a bit this year and hopefully maybe a little bit more next year.
And
so
looking to 2020, and again, as I'm reminding everybody, this is actually a new decade. It seems to have kind of crept up on us without realising. What's the next decade got ahead of you?
I'm very excited about the next decade, but I'm not actually sure exactly where we're going, because I had so many things pinned on 2019 that, and it all happened. Now, it all happened to an awful lot of hard work and a little bit of wing and a prayer and a little bit of luck.
But you say you got things pinned on 2019. Pins are very bad in your business. They burst the balloons. For the love of God, keep pins away. So 2020, what's happening?
So 2020, I suppose I'm going to put it out here. We're going to have our new website up in the first quarter of 2020. I've said it live on air, so now I have to do it. That would be a huge benefit for us. We have been making amazing things, and I suppose our Red Balloon Cork has the most stuff up in it that we're doing, because it's so easy to update your Instagram. But God, it's effort to update your website.
Yes, that's it. And we can't do Instagram's much easier because it's what you've been working on that day. The website, you have to go back in. There's something called back end. I don't know what a back end is.
Oh.
It makes no sense. Instagram, I get.
I have 22,000 photographs on my phone. I'm like, I just need like the little people, maybe that Johnny the Elf there can do it for me, is like, put all those pictures, caption them, and make them all look nice.
This
put them on the website.
That is
And also keep doing it as we keep making creative, cool stuff.
And therein lies the rub.
Yes.
Do as you go along. Well, look, Johnny the Elf is a prime example of the wonderful things that you do in Red Balloon. How do people find you? The website that's about to be changed, but what is the website address right now?
It's redballooncork.com, but best to check out our Instagram. It's redballooncork as well.
You are genuinely a creative genius, because anytime I see your stuff, I instantly know it is Jenny Red Balloon, as you are known here on Red Business. Jenny Murphy, congratulations on having a wonderful year, and here's hoping the next decade brings you as much joy and success as you can hope for. Jenny,
thanks,
thank you for joining
Jonathan
us.
And Nulli Conna.
Red Business. all that's best about business in Cork.
Now on Red Business, we are looking forward to 2020 and New Year's resolutions, of which there are many that are made and very few that are followed through on. One of mine, before we even speak to our next guest, was to use the Keep Cup. Stop taking those allegedly compostable cups, or indeed worse again, the ones that have to be thrown in the bin every single time in 2020. And to that end, my next guest has come up with an initiative that will help people working in one of the busiest parts of the city to avoid the dreaded takeaway cup. Dermot Vaughan is the general manager of the Cork Airport Hotel. Dermot, how are you? And thanks very much for joining us.
I'm good, Jonathan. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm a devil for these. I'm forever picking them up. I must go through, on a bad day, three or four, which is an awful waste. You are trying to incentivise people to bring their own.
Yeah, I suppose on our side, it's not just in our hotel here, the Cork Airport Hotel. It's very much in our group, which is Trigon Hotels, which is ourselves here, and the Cork International and the Metropole. So we've set up a greening committee, and the purpose of the greening committee is to look at sustainability in our industry. And we don't just look at our hotels, we're looking at different different actions that hotel groups are doing, both nationally and internationally, to see how we can be, I suppose, more efficient and sustainable. So we come up with just a starter, which is a Keep Cup Monday, where we're encouraging our guests to buy a Keep Cup. And this isn't a selling for us, because we're not selling them. If a customer comes on a Monday with their Keep Cup, we'll give them free tea and coffee. We see a very captive audience to promote this in the business park. There's close to 4,000 people working in the business park.
4,000? Is there that many?
Yeah. Who would be of the possibly of the culture of drinking a lot of tea and coffee on their way to work, a commute, who, as you said, stopping in the garages maybe once or even twice a day and using the paper cups.
And a huge waste that comes with that. You think of hotels, traditionally you have been reasonably environmentally friendly, because if you serve a cup of tea, it's probably in a very fine cup. The plates are all washed and used. It's kind of crept in, as it's crept in to every aspect of society, that these kind of disposable throwaway things all of a sudden became very usable. And now you've kind of decided to take a small step back from that.
Yeah, I suppose in our industry, Jonathan, food and beverage would be quite sustainable. As you said, a lot of our crockery would be reusable. Obviously, it's washed. Plates, knives, forks, etc. And where we do have a heavy aspect of the plastic products will be in accommodation. Obviously, your toiletries will be a lot, your shampoos, your conditioner, your body wash, etc. In the past, would have been in plastic bottles. And not only would they be in plastic bottles, but if they were half used, they're thrown out. So in terms of the efficiency of that, so we're moving forward totally. We're getting rid of, in 2020, we're getting rid of our plastic bottles, and we're going with a can, plastic bottles of water. We're going with a can, but still in sparkling. And there's so many companies out there at the moment who are looking at this sustainability line. It's the new buzzword for 2019, 2020 in terms of sustainability. But you see a lot of the corporate companies, it's when we're tendering for business, it's most certainly what's being asked for now is our policy in terms of sustainability.
And when you say it's a can, is the can recyclable then on the top? So in other words, what you're doing is you're still using a disposable product, but it's a more readily recyclable product.
Absolutely. And we're looking at all ways where we can look into that, going digital as many things as we can, or using our newsreader apps. So we're trying to look at different ways. By an overview of the whole country, where our changes are only going to make a small change, but I think we're looking forward, and we have a very, very, very interesting, committed, engaged greening team in Trigon, where we're looking at totally different things outside the box. And this isn't a PR, this isn't This isn't...
It's not greenwashing, as they call it. There's a genuine effort being made here. How old are you again, David? Remind me.
I'm 29.
29. So you're under 30. I'm probably one of the, if not the youngest general manager in the country of any hotel. Is that helping you drive this on? Because you're of a very tuned-in generation. I mean, old man of the hill here who's 14 years older than you. It might be accused that we kind of dropped the ball on the whole environment thing, and it's looking to the younger generation to get us out of the hole. Is that helping?
I don't think age has something to do with it. I think the people responsible for the actions around our environment and the actions in relation to greening and sustainability, I think everyone has to do it. I think it's been very much driven in, I think, maybe below 30. It's most certainly been driven in secondary school and primary school at the moment as education. For me, it was never mentioned in secondary or primary school or even college. And I'm saying the same would be for students who may be 5 years younger than me. So it's becoming a culture. It's becoming, as I said previously, it's becoming the buzzword. It's now in people's vocabulary.
Yeah. And when I was away, actually, just away last weekend, I did note that on the plane there was very little, and if anything, there was no recycling being done. In the hotel, I kind of did feel guilty using the little plastic bottle. The consumers probably drive this as well, aren't they? And of course, if you get them to come in for the free coffee on the Monday, they might come back on the Tuesday as well. So, I mean, everybody wins in this scenario when we make a bit of an effort.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. We have people who... who are coming here on a Monday with their Keep Cup, and it's the first time they've come here. So I'm not trying to sell them something on a Monday. There's no upselling happening. They're coming in the door.
Oh, you wouldn't turn it down, like, if they wanted to buy a croissant, you'd let them have it, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. But I want to be very clear that this isn't a selling. I don't have an agenda here in terms of selling. I'm not selling Keep Cups behind the counter. They bring their own. I want to be very clear on that. But there's a selling side of it on the other side of it as well. My job is obviously as general manager is to promote sales and drive sales within this property. And that's something that is working throughout 2019. I started the role in March, and we're really looking forward to 2020 with some great initiatives and great ideas.
I mean, I'm genuinely surprised that there's 4,000 people working up here. They all need to go somewhere for lunch, and you've been tapping into that market as well, presumably between yourselves and the other hotel here. They need somewhere to go.
Yeah, and that, Jonathan, is what we're looking at in 2020. At the moment, we have a very, very well-established Italian eatery called Olivo. Excellent food. We're very lucky to have an excellent head chef in Trevor O'Keefe and an excellent team, excellent food and beverage manager in Paul Murray. But we find that our food and beverage offering at the moment isn't catering for everyone. Our food and beverage offering at the moment is an a la carte sit-down menu where you might have a 15 or 20-minute time to wait. So we're changing all that. Hitting the ground running in Q1, where we're launching a kind of an Olivo market concept, where it'll be your looking at the greening and looking at the I suppose the environment. It'll be very vegan, healthy food where people can queue up and get it and sit down with the food, high end, which also then coincides in parallel with our meeting rooms, because our meeting rooms are flying at the moment. We have 5 meeting rooms, and we could do with another 5. And they're going very, very strong. But those people eat as well. They have maybe 3 or 4 food and beverage options a day. So we need them to eat, but they have their time is shorter.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there. Dermot, wish you and the team here at the Cork Airport Hotel the very best. Look, Dermot Vaughan, General Manager of the Cork Airport Hotel, thank you for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you very much.
The only show in town for Cork business, Red Business.
So 2019 is probably a year that will go down as one of those that wasn't great when it comes to cybersecurity breaches and bad news stories about what your data was being used for. Most companies are still largely oblivious to the risks of their data being online or being compromised in any way. But my next guest has set up a consultancy designed to help with that exact challenge. Philippa Jane Fire, Pro Privacy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
It's lovely to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for
having
me.
Tell us a little bit about the business, first of all. You and people will hear from your accent. You're not originally from Cork, but you have made it your home.
Yes, yeah, no, we love it here. I'm originally from South Africa. We arrived here 2 years ago, and I was supposed to be on a break studying a master's law degree, distance learning from Edinburgh. I gave a talk on privacy rights, and I was asked to please come in and help with this GDPR. So I had a look at the GDPR, and having done a law degree from South Africa, realized it was nearly identical to our Protection of Personal Information Act. So I said, yes, I can come and help you with this GDPR. So we went in and did an assessment. you know, got the business up to speed on what they needed to do procedure-wise. And from there, I was asked to come in and help more people and ended up having to register a company and give up the law degree, the LLM, and get on with work. So, yeah.
Okay, so therefore, you kind of, like most good businesses, you kind of fell into it then,
yeah,
did you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you started looking at the landscape, at how people were viewing their data, how they were protecting themselves, what did you find?
I find that when people are aware of the implications of not caring for their data, they begin to care about their data very quickly. But before they're educated to the point where they understand what actually happens to their data, they might not care so much, you know, signing up to a newsletter or using a service that's not entirely secure.
We have GDPR and it's become a kind of a badge to hide behind for a lot of companies who don't want to do the obvious thing. Yeah. It's misused more than it's used correctly, one would argue.
Yeah.
Is it a good thing?
Yeah, okay. You're talking to somebody who comes from a civil rights background where dignity and privacy are paramount. And I really strongly believe that unless you're exercising your right to privacy, you probably are never going to be the whole human being you're supposed to be, because you're going to have so many outside influences coming into your mind. Your mind is probably the most sacred space of any space, and we should be taking care of that. So yes, the GDPR is absolutely a good thing because it stems from the right to privacy and has extended into the right to data protection. So you get to take back your identity and only release that part of it that's necessary or that you want to release to the public. So you can wall around yourself and your family. So absolutely, yes, it is a good thing.
When people think about it, it was badly introduced because it was like this massive block that all of a sudden we weren't going to keep anyone's phone number on record anymore.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been how it has been in reality. But do companies get that when they come to you, or do they only come to you with a problem?
Yeah, we're trying to go into 2020 to be more proactive, and we're trying to push that on our social media channels and on the website, you know, proactive compliance, mature your compliance, rather than come in a reactive space and say, okay, I'm in a disaster. What we found before the 25th of May was that people just trashed data, they trashed databases, and they lost a lot of IP for the company. You know, there's a balance to be had between private rights and business interests, and that's the balance that people are battling to find. Is what can we do to grow our business in a responsible and ethical way? What should we be doing to protect our consumers and our people?
So it's probably something that companies have either long fingered or farmed out or not thought about in a while. So look, we're starting a new year. In fact, we're starting a new decade, which is a terrible shock to most people. This is going to be the 20s that we're entering. Yeah. What do they need to do at the start of the 20s to make sure that they are not only compliant, but engaging in the best practice?
Well, first of all, put data protection onto your risk register. It belongs there.
And you're assuming they have a risk register.
Yeah, I am assuming a lot here. So, you know, that's grand as well. Make a risk register, put the first line data protection, you know, it's very, very real. It's data protection and cybersecurity. Then have the discussions at the highest level of management, support the compliance staff or the staff that have been kind of often just, and I mean, this is going to sound terrible, but just dumped with the job. You know, they really need a lot of support. It's very emotionally draining. It's very taxing on their day to try and get around all the parts of the regulation that they have to implement in their daily work. So you have the risk register, you have the discussions at top levels of management, delegate down, you know, create a team in the business to deal with this, and then make it a long-term program. I mean, it should be a 3 to 5 year program in a business to get compliant. There's no just calling in a consultant for 1 or 2 sessions and yes, take your compliance. It is something that gets embedded into every single part of the business.
And at that point, then it becomes second nature to everybody when they're doing it.
Exactly.
You're not based in the city. You have a rural base. And if you're thinking of somebody running in your area, cybersecurity, privacy, protection, you know, settling out of Castletown Roach wouldn't be the natural starting point, but that's what you do.
Yeah, no, I come from a farming family, actually, so it is second nature. My husband is an environmental manager by trade, so for us to live in the city would be quite a big change. Our children grew up on a farm in South Africa, so we love it there, and we lived so far out from the city in South Africa, we got used to commuting and going in for meetings, so it's no issue to come into the city when we're needed here. You know, I work from a home office or I work from a co-working working space when I need to. So we're embracing the remote work principles and the guidelines the government's putting out now, which is fantastic. We'll be growing the business next year to hire in consultants to help with the auditing and the handholding that businesses need. Mm. We've developed an app for standardized auditing that's incredibly comprehensive and is being received very, very well. So we can get people in who don't have like the specialist skills that I would have, you know, and they would get more familiar with the skills that are needed.
So in other words, that they're not effectively a group sitting in the one place, but they are scattered through the four corners of Ireland. As long as they've got a broadband connection and brain and the background in privacy, they're going to be able to work with you. And the name of the app is the Cerity app, I think.
Yes, it is.
What does Cerity mean?
Should I be honest?
Yes.
Yeah, my business partner really liked the way that it sounded, so he chose it. And he doesn't have children, so I let him name it. You know?
Well, at least now you know what it is. That is it's like Surety, but Cerity.
Yeah,
it's
just
unique.
Sounds nice.
It's
there.
And that's been put together with the support of the local enterprise office as well. So everything is coming together for you now. Yes. Are you expecting a good year in 2020?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a very positive person. I irritate my family immensely with that, but I'm very, very positive. We've done so well in the last 2 years. And I really appreciate the support and guidance from the local enterprise office. We met with them before we even moved out here. You know, Joan and her crew, Cahill, they're in Mallow. They're really amazing. And the courses that they put on, I would really recommend anybody starting up to just plug yourself into that ecosystem.
Philippa Jane, how do people find you?
Online, obviously, you know, because I kind of live online.
Yes.
Website is proprivacy.ie. I'm very active on Twitter. My Twitter handle is just call me Pips. We have a Facebook page that's kind of more, how should I say, calm than the Twitter chats are. So, anywhere online or LinkedIn.
Okay, so Philippa Jane Frawley, proprivacy.ie is the website. The very best of luck to you in the new year.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks. Red
Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
My next guest completed her BSc honours in chemistry from UCC and was pursuing a life in pharmaceuticals for 7 years before taking a slightly different turn. And she is now the proud master of the Alchemy School of Yoga, which is based on the Model Farm Road in Cork. Jean Noonan, or Jean Gianti Noonan, be technical.
Exactly.
You're very welcome to Red Business.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
That was quite the gear change in professions.
It really was, yeah. I think I'd always been interested in helping people, and I'd always been interested in how things worked, and that's why I studied chemistry. And where I was making drugs, not necessarily making them, but helping to test drugs that were saving lives, I felt like I didn't have so much of a tangible connection with the people I was helping. And I'd always been interested in movement. And then I discovered yoga and I thought, wow, this is really cool. You know, you can very much see the effects that it has on people. And I just was totally drawn to it.
But you could have just, you know, practiced yoga. You didn't necessarily have to become a master at yoga. So, I mean,
and my dad would very much agree with you there.
Was that a difficult conversation to say you were leaving your full-time permanent pensionable job to take up being a yoga teacher?
It was. And to be fair to my lovely dad, he always supported me. But I think, you know, I had an amazing job and I loved what I did. Actually, I really did enjoy it. And I loved the people I worked with. But, you know, it wasn't long after the crash and here I was leaving this permanent pensionable, you know, secure job for life. That
they said
was,
you were mad, I'm presuming.
Yeah, my boss wasn't quite sure what to do. No one in my about 6 years, so she didn't know what to do when I told her I was leaving.
How do we solve a problem like Jean? Was probably the musical version of what it was.
Exactly.
So deciding to become a teacher is one thing. Setting up your own school of yoga is different. You had no business experience. You had worked in a lab.
Yes, exactly. Now, saying that, my dad is a bit of an entrepreneur, maybe one who never made a huge amount of money, but I think I definitely got his creative skills. He's a musician as well. And I think you have to be creative to be an entrepreneur because you're literally creating something that wasn't there before. And I feel I have quite a good balance between the skills for being able to teach yoga and help people with that, mixed with the business skills that are needed. Now, There were times I felt like I was drowning. I didn't know what to do. There was a lot of times I felt like I was pretending to be a business person. I didn't know.
Oh, well, I think that's pretty much every business person, to be fair. I don't think there's any of us out there who run a business who don't feel the odd time like they're somehow impersonating somebody else.
Exactly. And I smiled and cried through a lot of the learnings, for sure. But I had some amazing support and help, which was really, really good.
What appetite is there out there for yoga? It was a thing, and then Bikram yoga was a big thing, but that was a bit hot and sweaty for everybody.
Yes.
And there's lots of other things you can do now. Is yoga still as popular as it always has been? Is there a new market for it?
I think so. It's if the appetite, I feel, is insatiable at the moment, and it's also necessary. I feel like it's something that people need, and it doesn't necessarily have to be yoga, but there's definitely a need for people to have some sort of practice in their life that makes them feel normal, that makes them feel human. Nearly everything we do in our lives actually makes us feel inhuman, or, you know, strange or outside our bodies. And for me, yoga brings you back into your body. And it's a pretty holistic practice in that you can have a full fitness experience from it. It's a completely meditative experience. It's a spiritual experience. You know, it helps you with emotional issues. To me, it's just this beautiful holistic practice that I would say is not just necessary, is mandatory for most people.
You didn't YouTube it to get your qualification. You actually went to India.
I did, and you met
what do we call somebody who is the master of yoga?
Well, I suppose master is probably an interesting word, and guru is another word that can have maybe some more negative connotations to it. I always think if someone calls themselves a master or a guru, they're probably not. Whereas my teacher calls himself Yoga Rishi, which Rishi means sage or seer. So someone who's just dedicated their lives to seeking, to, you know, exploring what it is to be human.
Okay. And that was in India. And then you did another bit of training around mother and baby, postnatal pregnancy, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I can't imagine saying to a 9-month pregnant woman that yoga is the key, but is it?
It definitely is. The body changes phenomenally when you're pregnant. And there's a lot of...
Not in a way that pregnant women like.
No. Well, depends. It actually depends. And I feel like often pregnancy is given a really negative spin, but it can actually be this incredibly joyous spiritual experience if you choose not to listen to all the drama. Which, you know, is understandably around. But it's been really interesting. I feel women are their most intuitive when they're pregnant. They're their most in touch with their body because it's changing constantly and they're having to adapt constantly. And the same when they become a mother. And yoga actually really provides a platform for them to be able to not feel like they're disabled. I think a lot of the time pregnant women are babied, actually, and not safe to do that, and you can't do this and you can't do that. And I love giving them a thing they can do and a thing where they can feel strong. And given birth, you need an immense amount of stamina and strength.
Oh, you do. Yes. And the poor male partner needs a tremendous amount of strength, but they have to do basically nothing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I carried my niece around in a sling there recently, and I was like, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be pregnant, you know, to have this weight and this, you know, mass in the front of your belly. There's very little you can do. So I love teaching pre and postnatal, just to be able to help empower the women to actually strengthen their bodies, but really very much strengthen their spirit, their mind to get through.
But you get out of this as well, because you have food and yoga walking tours of Cork City. Now, I'm genuinely intrigued because yoga is something I'm not familiar with, but food and walk.
This is really interesting.
I like walking to get food. That's one of my favourite pastimes.
A lot of my students, unfortunately, it happens to be quite a female-dominated industry, but it's getting there. It's definitely balancing out. And it's really interesting, actually, because traditionally yoga was just for men. Women weren't allowed to do it. But now, at the moment, it's become quite female-orientated. But that food and yoga walking tour, a lot of my female students would bring their partners along because, you know, they have this practice and this class they go to that they adore and they want to share.
So one partner has a pint and a bit of grub and the other person does a bit of yoga?
Well, we intermix it, and it's very much helping you realise that yoga doesn't have to be this practice done in tight leggings on a yoga mat in a yoga studio. You know, that yoga is a lifestyle and it can be done anywhere. It's how you eat, how you live.
What is a kirtan?
So a kirtan is, I suppose, a sacred chanting circle is probably the easiest way to sum it up. So what we know of yoga these days, and what most know of yoga, is doing these postures on a mat.
That's putting your leg behind your head. That's
exactly.
That's the myth.
And that's 1/8 of what yoga is. And there's so much more to it than that. But obviously, you know, a lot of it is kind of culturally entwined in Indian culture. And so it's not seen as normal here yet. So mantra or chanting is another way to practice yoga. It's called Bhakti Yoga. And my first kirtan that I went to, I was looking around going, I've joined a cult. This is weird.
It sounds weird. I'm not going to lie. It sounds very weird.
And I was like, how do I get out of this? This is strange. And then one week later, I was the one up the front chanting and singing. And it's really interesting when you get out of the way of your head of, is this religious? Is this strange? Is it a cult? Once you let go of that, because it's none of those things, you realize that sound is energy and energy is healing. And when you chant mantra, especially the ancient mantras, it has this phenomenal effect. A lot of the time, most people burst out crying when it has this incredible emotional effect. Hmm. And I joke with other yoga teachers that we're a bit sadistic. We love when people cry because it just means they've had an emotional release.
We share something there. It's a long way from pharmaceuticals.
It is.
How long are you out of pharmaceuticals at this point?
Five and a half years.
Yeah. And the school then is going well, I'm presuming.
Yeah, we're only open a year. So we're open a year on January 7th. So that's really exciting. I think Cork was looking for a space. I suppose the style of yoga I teach and the other teachers who are there teach may not be the same as a lot of the other styles that are being taught. And I feel like it's a really holistic space where it's not just a place to do yoga postures. It's a place to learn about yoga. Okay. And that's why I wanted to name school. Mm.
You mentioned your dad, who seriously questioned the logic of this. I'm presuming now he's fully on board, given that you have a successful
Absolutely.
Business running out
he's
of
him. Incredibly
has he,
proud
has
of me.
He partaken in yoga?
Not yet.
Is the option still there for him? We're getting there.
He came to visit my retreat in Spain last year and just had a look around. And I think the closest we got is, I might come back next year, he said.
Well, look.
Followed by, I won't do any of the yoga, though.
Jean's dad, 2020, it's a new decade.
Yes.
Embrace it while you can.
How do people find
Jeannie Jayanti Noonan and Alchemy School of Yoga?
So it's alchemyschoolofyoga.ie is our website, and all the contact details are there, and we're the same on social media, on Facebook and Instagram.
Jean, I look forward to seeing a kirtan at some point, from the outside initially, rather than getting involved.
You'd
but look,
so
we wish you and everybody involved in the Alchemy School of Yoga the best luck. Jean Noonan, thanks for joining
thanks
us on
very
Red
much,
Business.
Jonathan.
And that is it from Red Business for 2019. A big, big thank you to all the people who took part throughout the year, and most importantly, to all of you who downloaded and listened to the episodes. We really do appreciate it. So from myself and producer Niamh Hennessy, have a great Christmas, and we'll catch you in 2020.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.